Welcome to another episode of Life in Jiu-Jitsu. This week we've got the Cutthroat Assassin, Solomon.
Yes, the Cutthroat is in the building.
Cutthroat's in the building. Right, watch out, protect your neck. Solomon, pronounce your last name for me again.
Solomon Amadia.
Amadia. Amadia. All right. Where can people find you on like Instagram?
Instagram. My Instagram is Cutthroat_Assassin, and the I is a one. Twitter should be the same thing, Cutthroat Assassin. You know, Facebook, you know, if you type in Solomon and Amadia or my videos on YouTube. Yeah, man, search me up, man. I'm pretty exciting, entertaining, and let's get the show going real quick.
You know, you've changed, brother. You were kind of like a mild-mannered, like, you kind of came into your own. Now, when I first met you, you're kind of quiet, you know. Then you just start hanging out with Omar. You guys got a little crew going together. You guys started lifting.
Yeah, lifting weights.
You got a couple fights under your fucking belt.
Couple fights, you know, just being angry.
Just came out of your shell, man.
Came out of the shell and, man, just pushing this cutthroat. You know, just life made me cutthroat. You know, that's how it is.
It ain't easy, man.
It ain't easy being cutthroat.
I say, you know, dying's got to be easy because life is hard.
Life is hard, man. But it's all about pushing through, getting, you know, past your struggles, man, and just grinding, you know, just staying on the grind, staying humble every day.
You just had a fight.
Yeah, I just had a fight Saturday. I won 5-0 pro now, man. 5-0.
5-0 pro?
5-0 pro.
Undefeated.
I think it was like 4 or 5 knockdowns in the fight, so I really got to, you know, showcase my striking. You know, everyone's been knowing me for my big slam, big takedown, so, you know, it was pretty cool to actually showcase my striking, you know, because it's always been there, but now I feel like the confidence of my striking is growing now, so. I see a lot more in my fights.
You're primarily known as a wrestler, right? Yeah. Now the striking's finally coming out.
Yeah, exactly.
You feel like there's like levels to it, right? Maybe like your striking is up here in practice, but when you perform or when you compete, you haven't had a chance to kind of showcase quite how good it is.
Man, and it's like, man, like my striking has always been there. Like even like Uriah or, you know, a lot of the top pros in the gym or like even the coaches would always tell me, man, just strike. I think out of all the fights, favorite cornered me in, like not once did he tell me to go for a takedown, because he was telling me, man, you're cracking this guy, just keep throwing your hands.
Keep cracking.
Exactly. Bucket. So now, you know, I kind of broke, you know, through that little mental barrier, I guess I was having, and now, man, it's just, I feel like now I get to showcase all my skills. So.
Walk us through this last fight. What happened?
So,
Where was it? Who was your opponent?
My opponent was Brent O'Neill. He's from the Scrap Pack out of Gilbert's gym in San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and you know, there was a little trash talk, you know.
Wayne, is he talking shit?
Yeah, you know, just talking a little smack, you know, about
Stiff of the trash talker, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, I guess for a while he's been talking about, you know, Team Alpha Male, how he'll, you know, try to whoop anyone's ass on Alpha Male. And I guess I just happened to be the guy to take the fight, but. No, I really enjoyed the trash talk. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, he came in the cage, he fought, so, you know, that's what they expect him. So.
Yeah. How'd the fight go? You go the distance?
Yeah,
or?
It went the distance. I went by unanimous decision. I mean, he was obviously expecting me to just go in there and just take him down. So, I think he was kind of, you know, shocked that, you know, I was trying to stand up with him the whole time. Just keep cracking him and, you know, just get the pressure, you know. You know, I just kept a plain face, man. I just kept, you know, coming forward the whole time. So,
yeah.
So it's pretty cool just to switch things up.
Yeah. Were you in danger at all at any point during the fight?
Nah. I mean, he threw a couple of leg kicks there and stuff, you know, but I think for the most part, it was just me just throwing, like, that right hand and just keep coming forward, like, the whole time.
Yeah. How do you throw the right hand? Do you throw it, like, straight down the pipe, or are you kind of looping it over a little bit?
I think the first one, man, it caught him off guard because, I guess when I saw the clip, is I threw like a 1-2, and then I switched stances. So I actually cracked him with the left overhand from the southpaw stance. And that's one thing that I've been working a lot for like the past couple of years with my striking coach, James Driekens. And, you know, and even when Dwayne was here too, man, I would always, you know, try to work on, you know, switching stances and stuff like that. So, I've always had these tools in my arsenal, but I feel like in this fight I just gave like a little taste for the whole world to see what I'm capable of.
So. Okay. You're fighting 170?
I'm 155.
155?
155,
you're
man.
A big boy.
Yeah, man, I think this
what was that weight cut like? What are you walking around?
I think when I started the walk around, I was like 190, 185, you know?
And then
I think a week out I was about like 178 and stuff. I remember like the night before weigh-ins, man, me and Omar cut like a solid like 9 pounds of water or something like that, man. And then I think
the morning, was Omar fighting too?
Omar's fighting, I think, Gladiator Challenge November 11th, yeah.
Oh, so he just jumped in the sauna with you out of solidarity.
Yeah, just, I was, you know, like, that's the homie, you know, that's the brother, man, you know, he came through, helped me cut that weight. And yeah, I mean, it's just this whole week, man, like, it's just been crazy. Just me mentally going in the fight, you know, the weigh-ins, you know, that kind of like blew up and stuff. Everyone, you know, was talking about it. And
what the happened?
Fight backstage.
How about the words?
Oh, no, like, just, you know, on the trash talk, like, I think I tried to get in his face like 4 times. And they tried to cancel the fight. Like, it was just super, like, it was just entertainment, man. I guess people were just talking about it. And just trying to show people, like, that real cutthroat, man, that real cutthroat persona, the attitude. Like, this isn't fake, it's me, you know? So it was cool that people are just kind of, you know, digging my style.
You're going to talk shit, you better be about it.
Exactly. So, yeah, man, just the.
So you, well, you're uniquely positioned to talk about the sport of MMA with regards to the purity of competition versus the entertainment value of things. You, see, for you, I feel like it's kind of come naturally. Like, some people say like, oh, you know, I'm not going to promote myself and be all fake like that, but you're promoting yourself. You're doing a great job. I don't feel like you're fake at all.
No.
This is just who you, like,
it's just me, man.
You're just a hard guy.
It's just, I've always been like this, you know, and I feel like with, you know, the struggles I've been through in life and like all the stuff that I've seen personally, you know, and I think that's why people like this whole like cutthroat, you know, because it's for people who've just, you know, just been through struggles, you know, been through hardships, you know. So when I tell people, man, you know, I'm fucking cutthroat, you know, basically what I'm just trying to say is that I've been through stuff in life. I'm still pushing, you know. So just because, you know, I got a scar on my neck, just because I got the scar doesn't mean I'm cutthroat, you know. Like, you know, a person could have, you know, went through other stuff in life, you know, that makes them cutthroat. You know, there could be a dad trying to just put food on the table for his kids, that makes him cutthroat, you know. So it's just like, so, and like, that's just the whole purpose of it, is just to show people, like, hey, no matter what you go through, just keep pushing, man. You know, like, I'm still here. I'm still, you know, training every day and, you know, trying to chase my dreams in life. So
yeah,
that's what it's all about.
How did you get that scar in your neck?
So, you know, it's a crazy story, man.
You were gone for like a year?
Yeah, a year and a half. So, like, look, yeah, man, like, I was a person. Like, I started this whole MMA thing when I was about like 12, 13 years old. You know, I've been training at Team Alpha since I was about like 13. So, man, I went like 7 years, bro. I swear to you, with that, like, not even missing a day of practice, you know. Like, I was so addicted to training that I remember, like, my senior year in high school, man, I would actually miss my morning classes just to go to the pro practice, right? And then I would, you know, and then I would leave pro practice and then I'd try to sneak in, I think during like break or something, so I can just go to my evening classes. So, you know, training was serious about me. So just me being out for that year and a half, man, it was just crazy. And the reason that I was out was, I remember, it was after my second pro fight, I ended up getting a CAT scan because after I beat my opponent, I thought I like possibly broke my nose in the fight. So they ordered a CAT scan, and then when they ordered the CAT scan, they said, hey, your nose is fine, but you got this black mass just like growing inside your jaw. And I was like, yo, what are you guys like talking about? And they were speculating, you know, it could be like a tumor or like some crazy stuff. So they ordered the first operation. And they ended up testing it, saying like, yo, you got this type of rare jaw cancer. They said it's like less than like 1%. It's called like ameloblastic fibrosarcoma. So basically, it's this rare cancer, man, that basically just eats your face. Yeah. I guess it's like a cancer of the jaw, right? And it just literally, man, it just eats your face. Like if you go like online and like Google it, it's basically just those tumors that just grow and grow, man. It just fucking just swallows your face. Yeah, man, like, it's some crazy shit. And they basically say, yo, man, I'm sorry, but the only way to treat this thing is to just go under and cut it out and just pray that, you know, it hasn't spread to your brain or anywhere else in like your body. So I think it was about 6 operations. It was supposed to be 3, but ended up being 6 operations because I had also an infection, which added 3 more operations. So basically, they cut out, like, freaking this whole jawbone right here. Got bones from one hit.
So I was listening. I was just trying to figure out how to do a screen share, so I could pull it up on.
Yeah,
I could pull up the The cancer on the screen. You know what? We'll do an overlay. Yeah, we'll do an overlay just so people know what you're talking about. No, that's fine. We'll just if you want to send me some pictures when you can, if you want.
I actually have some like graphic pictures on a few.
Yeah, send them to me. I'll cut them into the because we're not going live right now. But what we'll do is I'll cut them into the movie.
Perfect.
So people know what we're talking.
Yeah, I actually got some graphic pictures that I didn't end up putting in my documentary. Okay. My director had issue with graphic pictures, which I don't know why.
Well, we have no issues with that.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, so yeah. All you brothers, so.
So this thing was going to eat your face.
Pretty much, man. So I was just like, fuck. Why? I was just like, man, am I ever going to fight again? You know, am I ever going to train again? But I just always told myself, man, I don't know how the hell it's going to work, but I'm going to get back in the cage, man. And it was just a long time, man. Like, I think I was wired shut for like a year and a half.
You were wired shut?
Yeah. Like,
your mouth was wired shut for a year and a half.
I mean, the surgeries took about like a year and a half because the waiting time is between. But I would say, honestly, maybe about a year, about close to a year, I was like wired shut. So I was just eating just drinking shit. I got skinny. I think I got like 130 or some shit, the skinniest I've ever like been in my life, you know? And man, it was just some crazy stuff, man.
Do you have trouble breathing?
It was hard, man. But like I said, man, like the human body and mind is just a crazy thing, man. Like it can adapt to anything, you know. So I just got used to it, and you know. And then me, I'm a type of person, man. Like I can't sit still for more than like too long. So just me having to be in the hospital bed, be at the house, hospital bed at the house, man. I just told myself, man, like I never want to get this low in life ever again, especially, you know, at the age of 21, you know, people my age are out, you know, enjoying
life. Oh, I was having fun, dude.
You know, I was in college or whatever,
grab ass at the club,
yeah,
dancing,
all that, getting out girls, you know, like,
yeah,
all that crazy stuff. And then, you know, like, I was just like, man, like, I'm just here, just like, you know, fucking have to go through this. But I always believe, man, like, that happened for a reason. So, you know, it put me in this situation I'm in now, like, man, and I'm stronger than ever right now. So I'm thankful for going through it. And honestly, I feel like the whole situation went from being the worst thing that's ever happened to me to being the biggest blessing that I could have never seen happen.
Why do you feel like it was a blessing?
Man, because like, I feel like it just really changed me just going through that at a young age, man. Like, it just teaches you that life is short, bro. And it's like, you know, take chances in life. You know, like, most people, like, go to work and they're not happy, or they, you know, they do things that aren't supposed to be for them, you know.
Yeah.
And I was just like, man, I told myself, as soon as I get out this fucking hospital bed, I'm done with this.
You're gonna live.
I'm back on that fucking mat. You know, I'm pursuing my dreams, and I'm gonna, you know, just push through 100%. You know, and that's how this cutthroat shit came up, because one of my boys was like, man, he saw my scar, because you know, they had to cut through my neck here six times, man. It's like I don't got no like feeling here, like here at all, here. So it's kind of crazy, because so when I get punched.
Can you feel when you get punched?
Not really, man. So it's just kind of like a tingling like sensation, but for the most part, man, I don't feel anything. Which can be a blessing, I guess, in the fight, you know. So
yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, so it's like a freaking hip jaw, you could say. So.
So what were the operations for? The
operations. So basically,
there were six of them.
Yeah, so basically the first one was they cut out like just a black mass, and then they tested it, and it came out to be like cancer. The second one was just like, they're fucking went out in like 12 hours or 10 hours. Basically, just got to cut out the whole jaw and like a healthy margin of the jawbone, you know, just to see that it hasn't spread.
Right, right.
Right, so they do that, and I guess the third one was they got bone from my left hip. So they got a good chunk of my left hip bone, and they put in my jaw, boom. And on top of that, like, I had this crazy,
shaved it down into a jaw.
I mean, like, this like medical shit's crazy. So I guess they got like a piece of the man, they put it through, and I guess they smoothed it down.
But if you look right up, I mean, like, you don't really look different from one side of the up to the other.
It's probably because I keep a beard, but I think once I shave my beard off, man, it's like my face kind of
caves in a little bit.
You know. Okay. But for the most part, you know, it came in nice, but.
It's pretty fucking good, man. I wouldn't know there was anything. I wouldn't know there was anything
so
different.
The crazy thing was it was like a hip truck, but I also had this crazy fucking steel chain, bro. I'm telling you, it was like this thick from here all the way here. It was a steel chain. So they were going to actually put in like a steel plate, right?
Uh-huh.
But it looked like a fucking, like those little bite chains, you know? It was like here, so I had a hip jaw and a bite chain, And but the crazy thing was, after my third surgery, man, I think it was like 3 weeks after, I was fine. You know, everything was cool. And then, bro, out of nowhere, I fucking woke up 3 weeks after my surgery, and my face was just swollen like I just got out of surgery. I was like, what the fuck is going on? I sent a picture to my doctor. I had like this crazy little fucking bubble growing like on the scar line. And he was like, fuck, man, I think you have an infection. I better get you back in the operating room.
Like right away.
Right away. And when I got to the operating room, man, this is the craziest shit about the surgery that I'll never forget in my life.
So this is the third surgery.
That's the fourth surgery.
That's the fourth surgery.
So now I'm about to go into my fourth surgery, man. And so this is the craziest thing out of all of it. So they told me that they had to like, could you know when you go through an operation, like they put you to sleep, right?
Right, right.
So for this one, it was just weird, man. Like they were like, yo, because of infection, we're going to have to keep you awake while we put you to sleep.
I was
like,
oh, yeah.
I was wait, like, what are you guys talking about? I was like, so I kind of had an idea, but I didn't. So I guess they tried to numb my throat and all that. So it was crazy, man. I went to the operation room, bro. Fuck, I had like fucking 8 nurses. Can I?
Yeah, that? Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, so I had like fucking like 8 nurses holding me down, like stabbing me down. Like, yo, what the fuck's going on? And then there was a camera, like a TV just like that. And okay. There was a tube, bro. They fucking just kept me like this. Like, what the fuck's going on? And they had like this long ass tube, and they're like, I'm sorry, bro. We got to keep you awake to make sure that you can breathe. But we put the breathing tube in. And they stuck that thing, bro, and went from here all the way down to my stomach or something, man.
Shit.
And I'm just choking. I'm like, and the whole time I'm seeing like the shit on like on TV, right? And the lady that's doing this, I'll never forget her in my life. She's just this lady has been doing this stuff for like 20 years because I had my surgeries at UC San Francisco.
Okay.
And like, man, she was just so intense. Like, it was literally like I'm on fucking World War II battlefield on the beaches of Normandy, like about to die. And she's just talking to me, saying, stay calm. You're going to make it. You're going to make it, right?
She's like coaching you through
it.
She's
like coaching me through it. And then she's snapping like on the actual doctors and stuff. Like, it was the most funniest shit because I guess she's known to be very intense, you know? She's a whole persona. She's
commandeering the whole thing.
Yeah, you know, but like, I mean, I wouldn't have anyone else do it because she got me through it.
Quarterbacking the whole thing.
But man, I was literally choking there. I'm like, I'm talking about the tube that's going down. It's just like, that was a crazy shit that finally put me to sleep. And man, I'll never forget that in my life, man.
So they had to put the breathing tube in you before you went to sleep.
Yeah, man, that shit was crazy as fuck. Like, I'm talking about, like, all the way down. I'm seeing it on TV. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, it was the worst pain I've ever experienced, like, in my life. Like, I'm sort of just choking, you know? Like,
yeah.
I'm just like, fuck. The fifth surgery was obviously that to get bone from my right hip.
So that fourth surgery was to get the infection out?
Yeah, to get the infection out, just drain everything out.
Scooping
shit out. I guess they said they had pus coming out of my fucking face, like, on the inside here. It was just some nasty stuff. And I guess the steel plate, the infection was so bad, it was rotting in my face.
So they have to replace it? Or
no, they ended up just not putting a steel plate in, I guess, because they said if they put it in the plate again, the risk of infection might have been higher. So they were just like, no, we're just going to hope that this hip joint, it's going to be strong enough to take a punch, which thank God it did. You
know? Is that a continuing concern that it's not as strong as your regular jaw would be if you get punched in that spot?
I guess they always talk about it, but to be honest, man, like in my honest opinion, like I feel like my jaw's stronger on my left side. Like honestly, when I got back to sparring, bro, like I kind of tested my jaw. Like I mean, like not to hit on purpose, obviously, but when I got back to sparring after giving me a couple months to kind of, you know, kind of just form into my face, you say, and then
get used to it.
Yeah, man. Like I just said, fuck it, and I started sparring and. My jaw's been just solid, like, you know, my last 3 fights, you know, I won my last 3 fights back-to-back, and my jaw's fine. I've gotten hit there, kick there, and it's fine, man. Like, it just feels like it's, like, the rest, like, part of my body. I mean, of course, I don't have any, you know, feeling here or here, so I gotta constantly, you know, wipe my mouth if I'm eating Chipotle or some shit, you know. Some sour cream on my mouth.
You don't know if you're, like,
got
spaghetti
shit.
All
yeah,
over
exactly.
Your face.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, fuck, you know, so. Yeah, and that fifth surgery was just getting bone from the other hip, I guess, and the sixth one was, I guess, almost the same
thing. The fifth surgery, they grabbed bone from the other hip, they put some more bone in?
Yeah, no, I think the fifth one was yeah, the fifth one, I think, was they put bone back in. And then the sixth one, I guess it was, like, the same thing, too. I guess they put more bone in or something. So it was just 6 surgeries, man. It was just a long
process. Like cobbling the jaw together.
Yeah, man. Even my doctor, Brian Carman, just a great guy. You know, ever since day one, when I went to the operating room, he told me that no matter what I do, I'm going to make sure that you get back in the cage. So, you know, I thank that doctor with everything, man. You know, he got me through it. You know, cancer didn't spread. But, I mean, obviously, I got to keep it real with myself and just be honest. I mean, obviously, I still got to get checked out. You know, there is a chance of, you know, recurrence happening or, you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, you just got to push through and, you know, just pray to God that, you know, that I'm still alive.
Do they have you on a bunch of drugs to, like, suppress it or something like that?
No, man. I guess
you're good. Like,
tumor,
you're just...
man, is, like, it's really weird. Like, it's very, like, it's a weird tumor where I guess even chemotherapy, I guess they said, doesn't work for it. Unless it's spread, then I guess they'll try or something like that. But I guess,
they got to get it out.
Yeah. Basically, just cutting it out and hoping it doesn't come back. It's pretty much what it is. So, but thank God I didn't go through chemo. That's something that I don't think I would have been cool with. You know, so,
really?
Yeah, it's radiation and shit. So, yeah, man, just, you know, every day just being thankful that they caught it, you know, just in time, you know, as opposed to later on.
Your doctor, he's like a surgeon or he's like a...
man, he's just like some...
like a cancer specialist or...
Kind of, yeah, but I think he was more like a surgeon that does, you know, from, like, I guess the head and neck and stuff, you know?
Got it.
Yeah, so stuff like that. And then, you know, I guess UCSF is known take rare cases in Northern California. I think it's them at Stanford are known to take all like the rare cases and stuff like that. So, I mean, I was in good, you know, great hands, honestly. So, man, that hospital, man, they took care of me, you know, and I'm grateful for like the rest of my life. Man. So,
yeah.
To like, the whole staff, the doctors, and all those people that were
part of me. So, what was the process of coming back like?
Man, the process,
down to the 130 pounds, right?
Yeah. Man, honestly, man, as soon as it opened up my jaw, I just ate a shit ton of food and I just started lifting weights, bro. I started lifting a lot of weights.
Yeah, you got heavy into the weightlifting.
Bro, I got heavy into the weightlifting. And
I feel like that's what made you angry.
I don't know, man.
You had this, like, testosterone revolution.
I know, right?
Just, like, fucking getting big and...
Getting big and just eating and stuff.
Yeah, man. Just eating, fighting again. I think I got fucking 200. You were big.
I was big, man. And then it was fight time. I was like, yo, too big. I'm fighting 55. He's like, bro, you sure you want me 55? I was like, okay. So, you know, I cut the weight. I feel like just a big, strong 55 now, man. So, just solid. I feel like I kind of grew into my big boy size now. So,
yeah. Well, you still got some growing to do. Like, you're 23, right?
Yeah.
So, you're still going to settle into your man body.
Yeah. So, hopefully, I just keep getting stronger, you know, keep dominating these fights, man. It's a big show.
You went a year and a half without training?
Yeah, that was the longest I've ever been in my life. It was the most like hardest thing. Like, it was awkward, you know. Just
when you came back, did you feel like you forgot shit?
Nah, man, you know, like
maybe not forget, but like maybe you're not as quick as sharp, or was it frustrating?
Nah, man, like
or just like just it picked was up weird, where you man. Left off.
I kind of just picked it up. I mean, like obviously you gotta kind of, you know, get the kinks off and stuff, you know, but. For the most part, man, I was just, you know, I was kicking good. You know, my hip wasn't giving me any trouble. My jaw wasn't giving me any trouble. But, you know, I think that one of the main things I learned from it was just being patient, man, you know, not sparring too early. The doctor, like, give me something like, doing, like 6 months or whatever, just to kind of let the bone, you know, try to, you know, just
settle. Fuse, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just fuse in, man. So, yeah, I learned a lot of patience because I was like an impatient kid. But I just felt so good to be back on the mats, man. I felt like it was just awkward just trying to live life and not train, you know. So,
when your jaw was wired shut and you were training for that year and a half, what were you like? What were you doing with your time?
Bro.
Like, what? I mean, did that feel kind of like, were you just really bored? Like,
man, I was just fucking like, I was just thinking about training the whole time, man. I was just thinking, like, fuck, am I really going to come back? Or, do that. So I'm a person that, you know, I just try to keep myself busy all the time. So, but if I'm just at the house and I can barely walk and, you know, fucking barely eat.
You're like in bed for a year, basically?
Yeah, kind of like, you know, just kind of bed for a year almost, and like just back and forth from the hospital and shit, you know. So I remember I had like after the first surgery, I think I had a feeding tube too. So I was eating food through my nose and shit. Like,
wait, what?
Yeah.
Your nose?
Yeah, so I had a feeding tube, man, and it went from like my nose to my stomach. Like the first 2 to 3 weeks, I think. So basically, I was eating food through my nose and shit. I was just like,
they couldn't get it into your mouth because you were wired shut.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're trying to make sure I had some type of traditions. I guess. And then they gave me this little weird little fucking food things and shit, and I was like, I think it smells like that feeding tube smelled so like bad. For the first week, I would barely eat it. I kept telling my family stuff, like, man, like this shit smells so bad. Like, I'd rather starve myself to eat this stuff. You know, like, it just smelled. Like, it was dirty. You know, so oh my god, man,
was it TPN?
It was something like that. Man. Like
total parental nutrition.
It's either like. It kind of looks like milk carton boxes and stuff, you know? And I guess it gives you all your nutrients, like your protein, your fats, or like, but I think you can buy that stuff at Walmart too.
Or something.
Right. Yeah, so. It's horrible, bro. Yeah, that first Chipotle burrito or whatever, man. Oof. That was good.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
wrap, you know what I'm saying? Extra chicken, extra cheese.
And now you're back.
I'm back, man.
You won your last fight, no injuries?
Injuries, man, I'm good, I'm healthy, you know what I mean? I mean, took a couple of days off to kind of get, like, you know, like all the bruises and stuff, you know, healed up, but I'm good, man. I should be back in the gym in, like, 2 days or so, so.
Okay, okay.
Excited, man, you know, we're talking some shows, and I don't want to get into too much detail, but.
Okay.
There's a big show that kind of, like, reached out, and, you know, kind of just in the process and stuff.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to see you, I'd like to see you get under one of those, marquee headline banners, you know, either a UFC or a Bellator or a Risen. I'd say you're about there, right? I mean, that's where your peers are at, and that's
that's where you're at. Man. I mean, that's what we're hoping for, man. Is whether I need one more fight or whether it can be my next fight.
What's that process for? Like, what are those bigger name promotions looking for?
Man, I think like with the shows now. Of course, it's all about being a well-rounded person, you know? I guess shows now, man, they try to just find guys who can what, who can be entertaining, who can sell tickets and stuff like that. So, I mean, because, you know, like, back in the day, you know, when you get cut from the UFC, it's like, what, you have to do, like, 3 fights or some shit like that?
Right.
Now it's like, I was seeing stuff like guys are getting cut even if they win their fights, you know? It's like,
I saw a couple of those, yeah.
Like, it's crazy now, like, in this sport, it's like, you got to bring something to the table. I think who really changed that was Conor McGregor. He's that big, just, you know, Irish fan base. You know, he's selling tickets. He's entertaining. People buying pay-per-views. So it's kind of like, if you want to make your money in this sport, bro, it's like you got to bring something to the table. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like I bring that, you know, I come from a big Afghan fan base. You know, I got a huge Afghan fan base, you know, from Afghanistan. You know, I got Afghans from different countries, Sweden, Holland, you know, freaking South Africa, you know, that are always, you know, reaching out to me just. Different countries, you know, so I feel like super.
I'm rooting for you.
Rooting for me too, man. And you know, I feel like I
did. You did you like promote yourself to them, or did they kind of find you? There's not a lot of Afghani fighters, I feel.
The crazy thing is that in Afghanistan, it's huge now, man. Like there's like gyms popping up all over Afghanistan. There's a couple of fighters
from MMA gyms.
Yeah, MMA gyms, man. I think
they like to fight.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't like to fight, but they've been fighting. They've been fighting for thousands of years, right?
Afghanistan is known as the Gregor Empire, man. They're just in our bloodline, man. We just like to fight. You know, I think even Vice or whatever, Fight Land or whatever.
Yeah. They're through Vice.
Yeah, through Vice. I think they did a couple of clips on, like, I guess, MMA Rise in Afghanistan, which is pretty cool to see, you know. So, yeah, man, I feel like I have all the tools to be in big shows. I'm ready, man. So, Risen, you know, UFC, Bellator, any of those big shows, man, I'm down. Let's get it.
That's better. No, that's better. That's just right there. That's perfect. That's perfect. How do you feel about Conor? Yeah.
Man.
It's kind of like a love or hate type relationship with other fighters.
Me personally, I think he's good for our sport. You know, he brought a lot of attention, you know. He brought a lot of attention. A lot of money in the sport, you know? So it's like, you know, and I think now we're starting to see a change in MMA where guys are starting to be paid more now and stuff, you know? So, yeah, man, MMA now compared to when it first started, it's just different. Like, the talent pool, the pay, you know, the shows and stuff like that. Like, there's so many, you know, places that you can fight now outside the UFC where it's like, you don't really have to just go straight to the UFC now. Like, Rising is a huge show, the Bellator, you know, One Fighting Championships, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, man, there's so many opportunities in the sport that, you know, for fighters to take, you know, so.
Yeah, you know, I've seen, I feel like there's a, this like arc that people have gone through with Connor where, you know, even folks who really didn't like him at first, yeah. You know, when he talked his way into that Floyd fight,
yeah,
people were like, all right, fuck it, I got to root for him now.
Yeah.
You know, now I just want to see how far he can go.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. I mean, it's smart. He went to boxing to kind of, you know, what he made, like, what, $145 million or something.
Yeah,
crazy shit. But I still want to see him. You know, if he's got all these belts in the UFC, like defend your belts, you know, especially at 155, man. Like, there's some sharks in there.
Like, okay, so you do feel like there needs to be some semblance of order.
I mean, I don't know if it's true, but I'm hearing stuff. He's gonna fight Canelo possibly in boxing. So I mean, at that point, I feel like you should strip the title off him. There's so many guys who are waiting for a title shot. They got interim titles, you know, all over the
place. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, that's, I feel like some balance.
That's the part that is tough, where it's like, he is kind of, you know, I mean, two thoughts on him for me. One is, first, we should all be happy for him collectively. Well, you know, like, people should be happy. But not everyone is, right?
Take care of his family.
Yeah, yeah. But that thing where he's holding up the belts, that is kind of like taking food off of other people's tables, because you're kind of like hoarding all the opportunity for yourself, you know, and you're hanging on to this belt when typically there'd be an opportunity to compete for it. And so I think that's the only thing where I do, there's some friction, at least for me as a fan. I'm just like, all right, you gotta not keep all the opportunity to yourself. You gotta like allow people to compete for it at least.
And like, I think what can help with the whole problem is, I know the commissions or the boxing commission that approves like the weight classes.
Yeah, the athletic commission.
Yeah, so I guess they approve us like the 165-pound weight class, 75.
That's right.
What is it, like 195 and 220?
Right, they approve like five new weight classes in between.
I think that's smart, right? Because it's not just about like the weight cuts, but it's like if you have more weight classes, you have more champions that you can promote, you know? Yeah. So if Conor really got in boxing, I mean, fuck it. I mean, there's gonna be a 165-pound belt. You know, I mean, that's a belt that I would go for. Fuck, I mean, but then he shows that they're trying to open up a 65-pound weight class. Like, I mean,
that's perfect because you're right between 170 and
65 with a big weight cut. And I feel like 65 man would be just a perfect weight class. You know, so I guess Dana White said he's not like for the weight classes, but I mean, Dana White says no to everything. He has it.
It's hard to take him. It's hard to take him at his word, right?
Hopefully, I think that's what could kind of help with the whole, like, you know, champions getting hurt and stuff like that. It's just opening up more weight classes for more stars that they can have more pay per views. You know, in case, you know, if a card or a flag is pulled and stuff, you know, they have an extra champion and stuff that they can like throw prizes and stuff. So I feel like that would be good.
Make it a deeper pool.
Oh, for sure.
So. You know what's interesting about Conor is like he kind of like transcends fight. Like people that don't give a shit about fighting.
Yeah.
You know, like my mom was like, "Who's that loudmouth Irish guy that's beating everyone's ass?" I was like, "You mean Conor?" She's like, "Yeah, we're gonna watch him fight the black guy."
I feel like Conor is like the Rock of our sport. You know?
Yeah.
And like, he's just persona and like how he talks. So I'm pretty sure whenever he's done with like the whole mixed martial arts and boxing, whatever, he's gonna go into like some type of acting. It's like, I mean, it's pretty obvious, you know, like he has that character and like the boxer,
yeah,
and stuff like that. So he's for sure.
I'd like to see him take over Dana White's spot.
I don't know.
Dana can't do it for him.
Yeah. I mean,
I guess he's still relatively young.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably like 50, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, but Dana did say that he's gonna keep doing it until he's almost
dead. Yeah. So, well, if Conor gets those ownership shares in the UFC.
So did he get that?
I think he's working on it. Wow. You know, someone was talking about like the qualifications for being a business partner, and they're saying that Conor's like overqualified. Because you know, he's like responsible for half of their revenue in the last 2 years.
That's crazy.
In terms of like pay per view sales, he's responsible for like half. You know, he wasn't kidding when he was saying to those guys like, "I'll change your life." Yeah. You know, he wasn't kidding. He's responsible for something like half or a little over half of all the UFC papers.
How much did he get paid for his second idea? Was it like $2 million?
What? Yeah, I'm not sure. Whatever it was, it was like the purse.
Like $2 million.
Yeah, but it was like the purse plus the pay-per-view points. So the pay-per-view points are what really Yeah. You know,
I think Daniel Cormier, when he fought John Jones, I think his purse was like $1 million flat, which obviously it's not as big as boxing, but it's a big step. You know what I'm saying? Something. I mean, shit, if you get anyone to burn down,
I'll fight John Jones for $1 million right now.
Shit, I would. So it's cool to just see like it's changing a lot, you know? I mean, obviously, there's some stuff that we should, you know, obviously do better for the fighters in the sport, but it's good to see that there's progress. So. How do you feel about the Muhammad Ali Act possibly coming to this martial arts?
You know, I think it's a good thing. You know, I think it's a good thing for the fighters, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure if it's a good thing for the fans. And so I've been thinking about this a little bit. The interests of the fighters don't necessarily line up with the interests of the fans, right? The interest of the fans is to see the most competition for the highest stakes possible. I mean, you know, interest of the fans is like throw you in there with a lion.
Yeah.
You know, who gives a fuck, right? From a straight fan perspective, right? So, you know, knowing a bunch of fighters, knowing a bunch of you guys, I'm rooting for it. But I do worry about how it might dilute the sport if a lot more competition does surface and people are allowed to bounce around more.
Like trying to find like a balance.
There's got to be a balance. Like I'll say that the model that I'll look to give an example is like the NFL. They're a monopoly.
Yeah,
but it's good for the fans that they're a monopoly. So every year they do a playoffs, and every year there's a Super Bowl. Now, before the Super Bowl, there isn't a year-long negotiation. Oh, we're going to play in this stadium. I want you got to pay me this much. No, the Super Bowl happens, I think, second week in February, and it's going to happen no matter what because they're a monopoly, right? There's not those obstacles to creating the big competitions that there are in fighting, and so that's good for the fans. It's good for the fans that everyone's kind of under one umbrella, frankly, the teams have less rights.
Do you feel like the UFC has way too much power?
Over the fighters, over the fighters, but it's a treat for the fans. You know, that's the main issue, I think, is that it's a great product for the fans. It's just leaving a lot of you guys high and dry, right? And, you know, just to keep comparing it to other sports for a second, you know, if Tom Brady gets hurt, the New England Patriots still field the team. So it's not like the whole contest is riding on the shoulders of one guy who can slip on a banana peel and kind of the cards off. You know what I mean? They've got a second and a third string quarterback who will kind of fill in, you know, if something happens. So, you know, the other sports leagues do a great job of ensuring that there's going to be a contest that regularly scheduled, and it'll be between this team and that team, right? So there's not that same pressure as there is on, you know, one fighter to fight injured or whatever. In terms of whether the UFC has too much, see, the power is good for the fans. I was like, I do want to see you fight that other guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But it puts you in a tough spot.
Because it's like, am I going to fight that guy for peanuts or some shit?
Yeah. And if you don't like it, like, you know, you can go fight for even less.
Yes. So it's like when the UFC, which is the biggest show, can, you know, pay me this much, but over there in Japan or something, you know, they're going to have to fight one of their tough guys, but for like 200,000 or something, right? So it's kind of like, as a fighter, I understand that you got to be selfish to like a certain point, you know? But, you know, it's always cool to see that like the toughest guys fighting the toughest guys.
Yeah.
So, hopefully it stays that way, but also like the pay is good.
Yeah.
As a fighter, obviously I want to, you know, make the most money, get in, get out healthy as possible.
So. Yeah. Do you, I mean, are you thinking, I mean, I know you don't want to be thinking about it yet because you're so young, but there's going to be a life after fighting.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Dude, you're 23 now.
I'm 23, yeah.
Probably got like 7 to 10 more years.
Yeah, exactly. I probably see myself stop fighting.
Okay.
The latest, you know, so yeah, I mean, I always think about life outside of, you know, this whole like crazy fight game and stuff. So it's always, you know, it's good to be prepared. So, you know, I have some ideas about business and stuff like that. Maybe, you know, make some good cash in, you know, probably invest in businesses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, but it's just, I think as a fighter, it's always kind of tough to think about it, but honestly is the truth, you know. It's like, how long can you get your body beat up? Because I've been doing this since I was a kid, you know. So it's like, you know, I always do think about it too, you know, but as long as I'm healthy and, you know, and I'm going in the right direction, I keep pursuing the career. But when the time comes, you know, obviously I want to be stable enough to be like, hey, you know, if it's my time to, you know, stop this whole cage fighting stuff, you know, but, you know, I got other stuff that I can do that can take care of me, my family, of course.
You started at 12, 13 years old, you said. 13 years old. That was like before it really got super big, right?
Yeah, like it was crazy. It was, I think it was a time when Faber
was over in the WEC.
Yeah, like he just got his belt or something. And then, I ended up, you know, because I was born and raised in the Bay Area, and then when I was 12, I moved out here because, you know, I was getting into way too much trouble out there.
Were you a bad boy?
A little bit growing up, man, like, you know, just in school, getting into fights and, you know, some other stuff.
Oh, fucking perfect. Perfect.
I know, right?
You found your calling.
Yeah, so it was just, you know, I was getting into trouble. I think my mom was kind of worried about maybe, you know, she thought I was in a game, but, like, you know, getting involved with games and stuff like that. I think she saw it coming, you know, and she's like, yo, let's get you the fuck out of here. You know, you're like, come to Sacramento. And I think, like, I don't even know, like, a couple months into Sac, I started wrestling for like a year, man. And then after the wrestling season was done, I was like, fuck, like, I missed this shit.
What am I going to do?
Yeah, so I did karate for like a month and a half, but it wasn't as like intense, you know, you could say. And then my dad, you know, one of his friends, do you know that boxer Stan the Man?
Yeah.
Him. So it was crazy because his dad, he used to be a cab driver, and he was friends with my dad. And Stan's dad was like, yo, if your kid wants to fight, you know, there's this gym, like, you know, downtown Sacramento that you can check out. So my pops, so when I first told him I wanted to do mixed martial arts, like, the first 2 days, he's like, no, fuck that. Like, because I guess he saw a fight with Chuck Congo, like, in the UFC. It was like UFC 80.
Yeah.
Some crazy shit.
You thought you were going to fight Chuck?
Yeah, no.
You thought you were going to fight Chuck Congo?
Yeah. Well, so in the fight, Chuck Congo was just beating the fuck out of this guy. I'm talking about space with Buddy, and my dad was like, what the fuck is this shit? And my dad always does this, but 2 days after, he's like, yo, so there's this gym, you know, like, you know, you come check out. I'm like, yo, you literally just said 2 days ago, I can't fight, you know, like, but so he ended up taking me to the gym, and then, man, my first practice, dog, I just fell in love with it. My pop slides, like, you know what, this sport, you know, it's keeping him out of trouble. I would beg my dad to drop me up, you know, after school at the gym, please, please, please. So every day, you know, after, you know, I'd be at school from what, like 9 to 3, and then from like freaking 3:30 to like 7:30, I'd take like four classes at the gym, and just nonstop. And, man, it just kept me out of trouble, man. Like, you know, like throughout high school, like, I barely even party, bro. I never drank, like, even I'm 23, I've never drank alcohol in my life, you know. I didn't even smoke or anything like that. It just kept me disciplined, bro. Like, and my parents saw it, so they took me out, you know, from a bad environment at, like, just the right time, man. You know, it's paying off, you know? So,
very cool. Very cool. So,
martial arts.
Did you always know you were going to try and pursue it professionally, or did that, from the beginning?
Man. Like, it was weird, man. Like, just being in combat, it was just different, you know? Like, as opposed to, you know, like, football or basketball, it's kind of like, you know, you could be good, but if your teammates suck, you know, all you guys lose, right? But it's like, and MMA is different. Like, you train as a team, but at the end of the day, when you step in that cage, you know, you're the one that has to perform. And if you lose, you know, like, the fault is only on yourself, right? So I think that's what I liked about it too. But, you know, just as a kid, man, I was always like a little troublemaker. Yeah, man, just, I guess, like, Afghani pride, man, just so prideful, like, it just, you know, like, every time I get hit, man, it just, the shit comes out.
Yeah.
The intensity.
Your first generation, your parents were born in Afghanistan?
So my parents came from Afghanistan.
What brought them over here?
So what happened was, you know, from 1979 to 1989, the Soviets, they invaded Afghanistan. So my parents met out here, but they fled from Afghanistan because of the war that was going on. I think my dad, you know, he fought like a little bit, I think. Yeah. Well, actually, I had uncles and stuff who actually fought in the war and stuff like that. And then I think my pops, he fought for a bit. And then he went to Iran, actually, for like 5 years. And then from Iran, he went to Pakistan for a month and came out here. My mom went to Pakistan until he or she went there for like two, 3 months. So they're considered political refugees and stuff, you know?
Okay.
And yeah, so, you know, like, we never came from like a rich family and stuff like that, but we were always rich in our heart, you know what I'm saying? Because we always like had each other. It was always
me. Well, you're alive. You left Afghanistan, you're alive. You fucking beat cancer, you're here, you're fighting. Yeah,
exactly. So, what do you really need? My parents always taught me, man, it's just like, be grateful for what you have. Like, because my parents told me, like, the stuff that we saw to get here is crazy. Like, I remember my mom told me when she was from Afghanistan, she had to walk on the mountains from, like, Afghanistan to Pakistan, some crazy stuff, for, like, I don't know, like 10, 12 days, because I guess her uncle...
just walking.
Her uncle got killed because I guess he helped a lot of people flee, and then he got caught by, I guess, the Soviets and stuff, and he ended up getting killed and stuff like that.
So she's like, fucking, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out. And then she told me she walked on the mountains for like 12 days or some shit. Her mom, I think her mom.
Oh my God. Stuff
like that. Yeah, that's some crazy
shit. How do you like not get lost?
Huh?
How do you like not get lost?
I mean, I don't know, man. It's just, I guess, people
out there. It's intense.
People who are like, you know, just small people.
Oh my God.
Yeah, some crazy shit happened in the war. Now, obviously, after the Soviets, there was, you know, in the 90s, it was just chaos too. And obviously, it was going on now. So it's been like 4 or 5 decades of war now, man. It's been a long time. You know? And I guess that's what makes Afghans just tough. Like, even if you were born here, man, like, we're always taught to just keep pushing through, man. Like, just people that like just conquer through adversity all the time. So I just, you know, feel like that's how I've always been. Me and my older sister, and of course, my little sister who passed away and stuff like that too.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah,
just be tough people, man.
So this America thing is like a walk in the park.
Nah, man, like America, man, like this is the country, man, that I was born. So when I talk about this Afghani pride, man, I'm talking about my American pride too, man, because, you know, this is the country that's given me the opportunity to train, to, you know, go pursue my dream, and gave my family, like, a second chance, you know. So, man, you know, I'm from Northern California. I'm born and raised in the Bay Area, Sacramento, so this is just home to me.
What do you guys speak at home? Farsi?
Me and my parents, yeah, exactly. We speak Farsi. Well, the Afghan version is called the Dari, which is, like, a dialect. A Farsi, but okay. In Afghanistan, people speak two languages, which is Dari, which is, you know, Farsi, Dari, and
like a, yeah, like a yeah, dialect.
And Pashto, you know, so it's actually two languages out there and stuff. So,
oh, okay.
So, yeah, Dari and Pashto.
So, you guys speak Dari now?
Yeah. My family speaks Dari.
So, cool.
They're from Kabul. So,
cool. Kabul, yeah. So, you had two sisters. You have one now. You have one sister.
So I have an older sister now. She's in Buffalo right now, studying to be RN. And I had a little sister too. She passed away. So
that's too bad.
Yeah. So her story was like when she was 15. I think when I was just 18 and a half. Because my sister, you know, she was healthy her whole life. My little sister, but she ended up getting schizophrenia.
Shit.
When we moved to Sacramento, you know, it just got worse and worse. And I guess the story was she. She went missing for a couple of days because she'd always do this thing where she'd just wander out the house. You know, you have schizophrenia and stuff like that. You don't know what you're doing.
You know what you're doing, yeah.
And I guess that day I was at training. My sister was at school. My pops at work. And my mom, you know, she's like, she herself had a lot of health problems. Like she had like open heart surgery, stroke, and she went through like some crazy stuff too. And I guess that day, man, it was crazy. My sister, she just, I guess, I don't know, like she just ended up wandering from the house, and then my mom obviously, you know, she tried to go out there, and she like, kind of wandered off. She went missing for a couple of days. I think it was the biggest like search in like Sacramento County or Oklahoma.
Oh, wow.
And stuff. Yeah, man. And a couple of days later, they ended up finding her body in the Sacramento, like the water and stuff.
The river.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, man, like that was just I think personally, that was worse than cancer. Just like, you know, you have like the baby of the family, like she was just there and she was already going through just some hard stuff and now she's just gone, you know what I'm saying? So I felt like with me, it's like just every time I had an incident close to death, either with my sister or my cancer, man, they just really just showed me that, man, like this life is fucking short, man.
Yeah,
it's short. Like 1 minute, your life can be just perfect. 1 minute, it can be the opposite, you know what I'm saying?
I was just thinking about, well, you know, so this hat I'm wearing, Life is Beautiful. Haley and I went to to a music festival in Las Vegas last week. It's called Life is Beautiful. We saw 2 Chainz out there.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, 2 Chainz. Dude, he was awesome. He was in a wheelchair.
No way.
Yeah, he had a lady kind of push his wheelchair back and forth on the stage while he was just kind of laying down some bars. We saw 2 Chainz. We saw fucking Sean Paul.
No way.
Yeah, dude, I grew up. It's so funny. I didn't know Sean Paul was going to be there. And this is how funny life is, because right before I went on this trip to go to this music festival, I had this like phase where I started listening to Sean Paul again,
yeah,
and like Shaggy and
Sean Kingston. What's that
song
by Sean Paul? It was like
some Shorty Fireburn on the dance floor.
Yeah.
I mean, that shit's like Sean Kingston, dude. All those songs, all that old Jamaican, shit. Fucking wonderful music, right? Wonderful music. The Gorillaz were there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Lord was just okay.
The Gorillaz is that like band that's like not real, but
they're cartoon characters.
Yeah, the cartoon characters.
Yeah, they're fucking sick. They're so sick.
I remember they had that one song just blew up and shit.
Yeah, Feel Good Inc.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Man,
but you know what? If you like hip hop, their whole catalog is really good. Oh, like their whole album, and yeah. I really respect that actually with musicians where, you know. One hit wonder is like one catchy song. Yeah. That's good too. But when you can make a whole album and you can listen to the whole album, that whole hour of music was really good. I really respect that. And the Gorillaz do that consistently. So, anyways, the point is we were in Vegas last week at a music festival.
Yeah.
You know, this guy, you know, 2 days ago, you know, killed 58 people at a music festival. I mean, it's luck of the draw that he didn't decide to shoot the one that we were at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He waited for the music festival the next week to start shooting, but we were there in the same fucking location just a week prior. And then two days before the shooting, we were at a Jason Aldean concert. And Jason Aldean was the guy who was playing when he started shooting.
I've seen that.
Yeah. So I felt like the Grim Reaper just came up and like whispered into my ear.
Yeah, you know, he's like, I could have been there.
Yeah, he's like, I'm here. Yeah, like the Grim Reaper just came at me. He's like, I'm here, motherfucker. I'm here, you know? And my buddy's actually the last episode of the podcast, Ryan Johnson. My buddy is a medical student in Vegas. Oh, wow. Yeah, and before he was a medical student, he was a paramedic. And so he was saying, like, the night that happened, they called everybody that knows how to stabilize people. Like, all right.
And then he got called.
Yeah, so it was a war zone. Fucking war zone, man. It's just crazy, you know? So, you know.
Just some fucking crazy, disgusting people out there.
Yeah, who the fuck do something like that? But yeah, man, you know, you got to make the most of the opportunities that you are given.
And it's like, man, and, like, the reality of this world is, like, like me and my friends always talk about it. It's like, man, we live in honestly like such a dirty, just bad world. But the like 1% that's good, bro, is just worth like. You know what I'm saying? Like, like for the most part, bro, we try to do better. Dirty world, bro. But you know, just the little good that there is in this world, bro, we should fight for. You know, we should try to make some change and stuff. You know,
yeah.
For people, you know, all people in general. Man. So it's like. And for all the people that passed away, man, rest in peace to all the families, you know, going through, all the people that passed away, man. Like it's crazy, you know, because, you know, it's fucking Las Vegas, you know, like, no one would ever expect it to happen, you know, at Las Vegas, you know, in general. It's crazy, man.
Before they found out that it was a white guy.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of people are like, that's ISIS, I guess.
Yeah, Muslim terrorist or something.
Yeah. Are you feeling that right now? I mean, just because the climate is Solomon, you know, you're the Afghani guy.
Yeah, not for sure.
It's a tough climate word right now.
Not for sure, you know, and like, I'm going to be like really honest, like me being part of like Afghan, like there were some people who always told me, oh, man, you should kind of tone it down, you know, like people are kind of scared of like certain groups of people, and, you know, your family.
Telling you not to be yourself.
Yeah, you know, and then people would always tell me that, but man, I would always say, man, fuck that. God made me how I am, God made me this cutthroat fucking guy, and I've just always been proud of who I am, man. If people don't like it, fuck you, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, like, I just try to push, like, I mean, like, I don't like to say I'm a role model, you know, because I feel like there's way better people out there who can, you know, who do a better job than me, of course, but, you know, it's just like, oh, some people, man, just be proud of who you are, even all this tension going on. But, bro, it's like, we weren't all made to be exactly the same. You know what I'm saying, man? It's like, everyone's different. Like, I got some brown skin, he might have white skin or you know, some shit like that. But just because I have brown skin, you know, I shouldn't be embarrassed of who I am, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's what people like about me, too, is that I just keep it real, you know? Like, I just, you know, I am what I am, and, like, I accept it, you know? But I also understand, like, me being Afghan and background, like, all the stuff going on, it does get kind of tough, you know? But I'm just trying to show people, like, hey, you know, us Afghanis, bro, like, we work hard, you know? We're proud to be from there, and we're proud to be from this country as well,
you know? Yeah, so, yeah. You know, Afghanis are some of the nicest people I know.
Actually, like, we're actually known to be some of the most hospitable people on this
planet. You know,
hospitality is crazy. I'm telling you, man. Like,
you go to my
house, my mom's house.
It's like, oh, don't get up. What can I get for you?
Exactly, bro. If you come to my mom's house, bro, she will give you food. Like, even if you're like full, like, we're gonna just feed you until you can't walk anymore. You know what I'm saying? Because yeah, just part of our culture is like, we actually have this code of honor that we have, where it's like, if we take you in as a guest, it doesn't matter if you're a Christian or a Jew or you're part of our faith. If we take you in as a guest, we're willing to die for you. You know, it's kind of like that one film with you seen it with Mark Wahlberg, Lone Survivor.
No.
Yeah. So in the film, he was actually getting a soldier. He was getting killed by a bunch of like Taliban.
They take him in.
Yeah, right. And then I guess he was taken in by, you know, some people who are from, you know, like the tribal areas and stuff, and they were actually fighting against the Taliban to protect him. And his head, he's like, yo, what the fuck? Like, I'm an American. These people are trying to protect me, you know? Because it's just like, if we take you in as a guest, it's kind of like your enemies are our enemies too. So we're all about hospitality and then taking care of our guests and stuff like that. So
I went to high school with this kid, Chris Arif. He's Afghan. Afghani. Yeah. So, he's like the nicest dude. Like the nicest fucking guy. Yeah. And we have one other one too. I think his name was something Azeem. He was running back for a high school for a high school football team. He was a little cocky because he was a beast, but you could tell he was a kind soul.
Yeah, you know.
And then meeting you too. Man. So, last time we rolled, you were in the gi.
Yeah,
so I put the gi on. Are you doing any gi work nowadays? Or how do you? Do you find it important to make time for that or not?
I try to do as much gi as possible and stuff. Because I know, like, there's a stigma of, like, some MMA fighters don't do gi and stuff like that. But me personally, when I do jits, I try to do more of the gi because I feel like, man, with the gi, you know, it opens you up to more chokes and stuff like that. So I feel like with the gi, it's obviously going to be because me, I'm a very scrambly person, you know, with my takedowns.
You are, yeah.
Wrestling and stuff like that.
You're overwhelming, man. Like, honestly, yeah, like, I feel like if you get the side control, or, God forbid, on my back, it's like, well, fuck, we're in for a long ride here. Like, how do I get this guy off me?
And, like, the thing with the gi that I like is, like, it really just calms me down, man. Like, it makes me, like, in my mindset, like, think more, you know, like, I just can't scramble it up. It's so sweaty and stuff like that. So it's more like, you know, I got to worry about more chokes and stuff. So it really just calms me down. And every time I put on the gi, man, it's just so peaceful, man. Like, it's kind of like with MMA training, it kind of gets stressful, right? You're just like, fuck, I just kick, you know, all that crazy stuff. But with the gi, man, I'm just having fun in there, you know what I'm saying? So that's why I try to make as much
time. More relaxed, too.
Yeah, so, like, you know, I do, like, a lot of my gi with, like, Dustin Ibarri, Fabio Prado. You know, I've been taking David Maxwell's classes, too, every opportunity that I have.
Yeah, Davin's the man.
Davin's fucking good.
Yeah, he came on about 3-4 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah. On his podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sick.
Yeah. He I gotta learn more from Davin. He's so smooth. His game is like so technical and smooth.
Like, he's so calm, collected. And I like learning from Dustin too, man. He's so detailed, bro. Like, just when he explains stuff. And then he does, and the thing I love about Dustin too is when I take his gi classes, man, He incorporates takedowns so much, you know, and it's good for my style. So he just incorporates a lot of takedowns, you know, in the open. And then I remember a couple classes, we spent the whole class just fucking doing takedowns off the wall, which is my specialty. You know, like, I love getting double legs, big slams off, like, you know, like the queso, man. It's just cool to have these different jiu-jitsu coaches and their styles. You know, Pablo is just a monster, of course. So he was actually my first jiu-jitsu coach, and I actually go out to Dixon and train with him and Anderson Silva's former striking coach, Richard Salvante. So okay. Yeah, so I go out there on Thursdays to Fabio's gym, do some jits, and I do take the striking coach's class too. So man, it's just cool to get these different perspectives, and that's the blessing of being a team alpha, is like all the coaches there, man. You can just pick and choose, you know, different
ways. How does that work? You kind of get to pick your own coaches, or you kind of get to, like,
I guess
pick your own crew, because you got your own crew that you work with, right? Like you and Omar
and Angelo. Like, obviously,
you like break up a little working groups.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, all of us take our pro practices
together.
Yeah, take the pro practices, the wrestling, sparring, sparring and stuff like that. But then also outside of practice, you know, we also guys that we drill. So, you know, I drill with Omar because he's more of my weight class. I mean, we click hard. Angelo's like my size too. So it's just going.
Angelo's getting a little bit bigger now. He's getting really. It's getting a little
bit hard. I'm pretty sure, like, I mean, I'm saying it now. He needs to get on that contender series, bro.
He's got a bright future.
Bro, he's good.
He's got a very bright future.
He's good everywhere, just technically sound. So, man, he really, I mean, hopefully the next season of the contender, man, they pick him up. I feel like Dana White will go crazy.
You know, he's got a real potential to go far too. He's a good looking kid. Yeah. Super fucking handsome. Very, he looks like Superman.
Very marketable. But, like, me and Omar made this joke, like, we call him the Canelo Alvarez of mixed martial arts, you know, because, you know, he's got a little pretty boy face, and, you know, he hits hard too, you know, he's a super nice guy, man, you know, so, man, Angelo's got a bright future. Omar, man, Angelo, crazy, little, crazy, you know, A-Rap, you know, hopefully we get to see him on that show in Brave. It's a show in the Middle East, you know, you can try to get on.
I guess. Wait, what's he trying to do?
It's a show in the Middle East called Brave MMA. If you search it up, man, it's like basically the president of the country of Bahrain, and he's just cashing out motherfuckers. Like, I'm talking about, he's doing all these shows. Like, he had shows in Brazil, in Mexico, I think in freaking Uzbekistan.
Like, for hobby almost?
Yeah, man, he's just rich, you know, that Bahraini money, man, and Omar's trying to get on that show. So hopefully, after a couple wins,
get taken care of, huh?
Yeah,
come under the wing.
Omar's super young, man. Like, he's only 21. I think that crazy fuck, because he
is. He really? He's only 21.
He's only 21. He's just a big guy. He's just fucking tall, you know? And Omar's crazy.
He cuts
man.
The weight too, man. Yeah, he cuts the weight. I see him get down to like 170.
The one person that I've met who's good at cutting weight is Omar, man. Like, the motherfucker could cut 20 pounds in like a day, and he's just so calm with his face. He's like, you know, like he just doesn't
give he, a he look, when I see him, he looks like nothing faces him.
Yeah, nothing faces
him. He's got those like Hannibal Lecter eyes.
Everyone like was saying that about Omar too. Like, yeah, he's like, like, he's a very quiet guy, you know, so, you know, just kicking with him, you know, he's slowly, you know, breaking out of the show. Yeah, you know, he's a super young guy.
Amir says you helped him get a do in the martial arts.
Oh, yeah.
Amir's like one of my closest friends.
Yeah, so the story with Amir was that his father, he's from Iran, right? So his father and my father were both cab drivers in Sacramento.
Yeah.
And I remember when Amir came from Iran, him and his dad came over to my house, and Amir was just, you know, asking him questions, like, oh, so you fight, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, man. And I told him that, you know, you should stop by, and, like, the gym is downtown. And at the time, he was living downtown with his pops, you know. So, you know, he ended up coming, and his dad, you know, he signed him up at the gym, and Amir, bro, just seeing how he came from Iran straight to the gym, bro, and he just fucking, his jits is nasty.
He's winning
all his fights, man. Like, you know, he's kind of like that quiet, like, killer type, you know what I'm saying?
He's coming out of the shell. It's fun to watch him come out of the shell.
Good kid, he comes from a good family, you know. So he's gonna be one of the top, I feel like, Persian fighters.
That's why I keep telling Amir, he's like, dude, Amir, you gotta go out there and like rally the Persian community behind yourself.
It's huge, you know? It's huge.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, he'll come out of the shell a little bit more. I think the Persian will be big.
Amir's good, bro.
But like, I feel like he should be fighting in LA. He's in LA, like in Woodland Hills.
Oh,
like,
yeah, one of those big Persian communities. Los Angeles got that huge Persian.
Yeah, he's got to be down there. He's got to be down there, dude. You know, he like, I want to see like an Amir Kazemi brand of like Hookah Charcoal. You know,
from the next to Iron Sheik, you know, something like that.
Fucking something, man.
Some crazy shit.
He's coming out of his shell, dude. Yeah. Actually, so this is crazy. He I put him on my Snapchat.
Oh, no?
Yeah. We took him out to drinks and some food after celebrate his victory. And this girl, I don't know how she's on that, but she follows me on Snapchat. And she's like, oh, my God, who's that? He's adorable. Can I meet him? Yeah. Little playboy.
Yeah. There's all the girls down.
It's all grown up, man. All right, brother. Final thoughts.
Final thoughts, man. You know, thank you guys for, you know,
sorry. That's okay.
Are we still live?
Yeah, we're still going, yeah.
Okay, sure. All right, just cut that
out. I'll cut that out.
All right, so you said final thoughts, right?
Yeah. And it's okay if you don't have me. That's okay, too.
Yeah, man, just watch me for my next fight. You know, we got some stuff that we're working on right now, so hopefully I can announce it soon. You know, so, you know, we're talking to some shows right now, and hopefully my next one's going to be a big one, so stay tuned, man.
Okay.
And come fuck with the Cutthroat.
Cool, cool. Tell us again where folks can follow you on.
Yeah, follow me on Instagram at Cutthroat_Assassin, and the one is at, I mean, and the I is a one. Facebook, same thing, Solomon Amarjo. Twitter, same thing, Cutthroat Assassin. So watch me, man. I'm about to be in the big shows pretty soon, man.
All right, brother. Thank you.